Good morning, how are you? Can you hear me? Technology and Egyptians doesn't work together, so I'm expecting some technology troubles, but that's normal. Thank you for having me in this morning. I knew that this will be a very special church, because the minute that I start to get in my car to come here all the way from Toronto, we've been having quite busy morning. By busy, I mean we've been under attacks and then from different directions. So I said, well, this means this church is really chosen for great things. So I thank you for having me, and I thank David for inviting me. I know David now for a while, definitely when he contacted me, I told him, David, I know you, I will come, even if it's far away, I still will make it. Let's talk about what's happening. Freedom, justice, and human rights. These three principles is a dream of every human being alive, and these three principles as well was and still and will be always my dream. My name is Majid Shafi. I was born in February 17, 1977, which is mean I'm still young and handsome. Thank you very much indeed. I appreciate that. I was born from a wonderful Muslim family back home in the Middle East, in Egypt, Cairo. Most of my family worked in the legal career. What I mean worked in the legal career, my uncle was a lawyer. My uncle was a judge in the Egyptian Supreme Court. My brother was a lawyer. My father was a lawyer. When you're born from family like this, you found a huge big library in your bedroom full of books about freedom of religion, full of books about the rights of the minorities. I believed in every and each one of these books. After I finished my high school, my family wondering where I want to continue my education, I wanted to go to the law school to become a lawyer like the rest of my family. In the first year in the law school in Alexandria, as a Muslim young man, I discovered the persecution that happened to the Christian minority in the Middle East. You have to understand, as we are worshiping here freely, this is not the case in many countries. I have no idea what is happening here, but it's okay. It's holding. In a country like Egypt, there is law in the Egyptian law that you cannot build churches. You can build bar, discotheque, but not a church. There is between 6,000 to 7,000 Christians, Egyptians, that are in prison just because they are Christians, not because any other reason. In many countries around the world, Christianity is forbidden and a crime. For the people who doesn't know the history in the Middle East very well, Egypt was a Christian country until the 7th century, when a man entered Egypt by force by the name of Omar bin al-As, and he entered Egypt and he forced the Christians to convert from Christianity to Islam. Many people doesn't know that. As a Muslim young man, I start to wonder why there is persecution happening to the Christian minorities. Let me put it by this way. You do not persecute somebody unless you are scared from the truth that they carry. Are you with me this morning or are you sleeping? Okay. A sleeping church will not work with me, I can tell you that much. Let me put it by another example. I live in downtown Toronto, so our office is downtown Toronto, my home is downtown Toronto. I was born in Cairo, 17 million in one city. So I need noises, I need people that they are fighting with each other, swearing at each other. It's beautiful, it's like music. I live here in Waterloo, I will die in 3 days. I need a movement, and I need a fast movement. Besides, I'm ADD. So I can't sit in the same position for a long time. Every Saturday in my home downtown Toronto, Jehovah Witnesses used to come and knock on my door. I never persecuted them. I never yelled at them. I never screamed at them. It's the opposite. I always smile in their faces. And I always, come in, let's have a cup of tea together. And after that they come in, I lock the door. They can't leave. But that's a different story. I have 5 Jehovah Witnesses in the closet. I forget to give them water this morning, but that's not the point. My legal advisors always say, Majid, stop making these jokes, we'll get sued one day. And I always tell them, that's why we have insurance. I don't need to persecute them. I don't need to persecute or yell or scream at people that they disagree with our beliefs. Because I'm standing a rock. For that, winds doesn't scare me. I have the light, for that darkness doesn't matter to me. What we need to understand, that they do not persecute us, they persecute Christ in us. And that's what they persecute. So as a Muslim young man, I start to wonder why there is persecution happening to these Christian believers. My best friend, his name was Tamer. Tamer was a Christian. I was a Muslim. We both born in the same city, in the same neighborhood. As a matter of fact, his mom and my mom get to know each other because we was born in the same hour in the same hospital. So we grew up together, and I have no idea what is that. What is that? Yeah, that's better. Everything is made in China is just crap. That's what it is. And yes, I just say crap in a church. I don't care.
We love you.
I love you too. I went to my friend Tamer. I told him, Tamer, why there is persecution happening to your community? I don't understand. And Tamer said, Majid, I cannot answer your question because I'm afraid that my answer can affect our friendship together. But I will give you a book. Read this book and you find answers for every question that you have. I took this book. This book wasn't only about rules and regulation and laws. It was also about love and forgiveness and sacrifice. We call it the Holy Bible. I didn't know anything about the Holy Bible. I didn't know the difference between Old and New Testament. I just opened the Holy Bible like this. And it was John 8. And in John 8, they brought a lady commit adultery, threw her in front of the Lord and told him, listen, if you are really son of God, judge her according to the law of Moses. Now, according to the law of Moses, this lady, she deserved to be stoned to death. But the Lord started to write down in the sand by his finger. They repeated the question again. And he looked at all of them and he told them, who without sin cast her the first stone? Now if you think about it for a minute, the only one who can really cast the first stone is Christ himself, because he's the only one who has no sin. But he didn't. It's the opposite. He looked at this lady and he told her, go, sin no more, I forgive you. This was my first time I met Christ. I start to read the Bible. I start to compare between the Bible and the Quran, which is the book of the Muslims. And almost 11 months later, I went back to my friend Tamer. I told him, Tamer, now I know what is Christianity. Now I know what is Christianity. Christianity is not a religion. Do you understand what I'm saying? Because I'm really bugged by people that consider Christianity a religion. Christianity is not that you go to the church every Sunday, hallelujah, bless the Lord, and see the Lord next Sunday. That's a club. Or United Church. One of the, anyway. Christianity is a relationship with God. It's not a religion. Christianity is a relationship with God. Are you with me this morning? Okay. I know she's with me this morning. I don't know the rest of you. I told him, Tamir, now I know what is Christ. He's not just Almighty Lord, He's flower in the middle of the desert, almighty light in the middle of the darkness, and warm hug in the middle of cold night. Tamir, I want to accept Christ as my Lord and my Savior. And Tamir jumped from his chair, hallelujah, bless the Lord, and all of this stuff. I told him, Tamir, do me a favor, just sit down. He said, what you have in mind? I told him, listen, man, the Bible said faith without action is what? It's a dead faith. I told him, as I was a Muslim and I have complete all my rights, I want to be a Christian and I have complete all my rights too. So we started as a seven students in the law school. We started underground organization, human rights organization, asking from the Egyptian government to give us our rights as a minorities in Egypt. In 2 years' time, we grew up from 7 to 24,000. We was able to build churches and psych, because as I said, by the law, by the Egyptian law, we cannot build churches. So we were able to build 2 churches inside caves, inside mountains. I respect the law as long as the law does not interfere with God. Are you with me? I'm a lawyer by education. I'm a defender of the law. But my Christianity and my belief is above the law and above the state. Make no mistake. Because if you think that persecution is just something happening overseas, I need you to wake up, because persecution is here in Canada and it's coming stronger and stronger. If you think that we will not wake up one day, it was a promise in the Bible. The persecution, if you follow me, you will carry a cross on your shoulder. Of course, it's not the same level like in the Middle East or Africa or China. But it is here and it will increase. And the enemy will use politically correctness as the weapon. Politically correctness is the very cancer in our Canadian society and fabric. When you have a prime minister that choose to support every religion but not Christianity, when you have a prime minister that choose to legalize marijuana for our kids, when you have a prime minister that choose to take off his shirt every 5 minutes, we have a problem in our nation. Are you with me this morning? We built 2 churches inside caves inside the mountain against the Egyptian law. We built 1 medical clinic. We built 1 Bible school. And we start to ask, and we establish a newspaper to ask the Egyptian government to give us equal rights like the Muslims. And I start to write a book about the difference between Islam and Christianity. I publish it in Egypt. When you start to be active, that's when the Egyptian government start to, you know, monitor you. And here's the part of the story that I don't like to speak about, but we both hear. In August 15, 1998, I was in my office 1:30 a.m. in my office in Al-Haram Street, downtown Cairo. I heard knock on my door. Somebody asked for a name. I told him, nobody here by this name. I closed the door. It was 1:30 a.m., so it's a very strange time. And not many people know that I was in my office that late. 3 minutes later, 5 soldiers, 2 officers, they came, they broke the door, they arrested me from my office, they took me to a police station behind the Egyptian parliament. It's called Lazogli police station. And they started their interrogation. They said, listen, we know everything about you. We know who you are. We know who's your friends. We know who's your team. We know about the book that you wrote. We know everything about you. One thing we don't know, who's the rest of your team? Who's the rest of the leadership of this organization? We just need to know every member in your organization. That's all what we need to know. I told them, I don't know which team and which organization and which book. And if you know everything about me, why are you asking me? He said, listen, you want to play tough? We can play tough together. I told them, tough is my middle name. You don't. Shush. Next day, they transferred me to Abu Zabal prison. If you know somebody from the Middle East, Abu Zabal prison is what we call in Egypt hell on earth. 25% from this prison, 25% of the space of this prison is underground, is the torture chamber, the torture section of the prison. Now, there is very few people that they enter this torture section and came out of it alive. I know only 7 of them, and I am one of the 7. The officers, that they torture you for 3-4 hours. And they will give you a rest between 15, 20 minutes, and after that they continue until the end of the day. Every day is higher level of torture, so if you didn't speak in day number 1, they take you to a higher level of torture. The officer that they torture you, they're always wearing a mask, so you cannot see their faces. And they always call each other by numbers, not by names, so you don't know their names. In the room, while they are torturing you, there is a military doctor standing behind you. This doctor, his mission to make sure that you are conscious to the pain. Not to heal your wounds, but to make sure that you don't die, so they keep you alive to torture you more. I was in the torture section for 7 days. For me, it was 700 years. Day number 1. They shaved the hair of my head. They have 2 wood containers, both of them full of water, but one is a very cold water, and you know it's very cold water because there is ice in it, and there is one very hot water, and you know that because it's steaming. They shave the hair of my head, they tie my hand behind my back, and from the neck, they will dip my head in a very cold water, and immediately in the hot water, and they will go back and forth. Now, you try to do this in your hand, this will kill you. Imagine if it's your head. And the only chance to breathe is when they exchange the container. So you have just few seconds of breathing, which give you the illusion of drowning. You are not drowning, but they give you the illusion of drowning. They did this for 3-4 hours, rest between 15-20 minutes, and after that 3-4 hours, and after that, until the end of the day. They put me back again to my cell in the night. They tell me, tell us the name of your friends. I told them, quite honest with you, I didn't take shower in a long time, and I really enjoy the cold and hot water. It's actually refreshing. And I told them, quite honest with you, I like my hair without my head without hair. I look extremely handsome. And you can see I kept the style a little bit, but anyway. When you are facing your enemy, never show them your pain or your fear. Day number 2, they hang me upside down. It's a 90-degree position, which is mean your lower part is up and your upper part is down. It's a 90-degree position. They beat me with everything in their hands. They burned me with cigarettes. They took the nail of my feet. Um, The only thing I can really remember from day number two was the smell and the taste of my blood. That's how badly I was bleeding. They beat me for 3-4 hours, and they will take a rest between just to rest their arms. At the end of the day, I couldn't walk, so they had to grab me from my leg, and I remember that I left a trace of blood when they grabbed me. They put me back again to my cell, and they told me, tell us the name of your friends. I said, no, I would not. They told me, do you know what will be your torture if you didn't speak tomorrow? I told them, no, I'm listening. They said, we'll take 3 dogs, and we will release them to attack you. 3 attack dogs. These are not normal dogs that you have at home. These are dogs that they will be normally German Shepherd or Doberman, and they will be trained to attack flesh. They are canine unit. And they close the door. What do you do if you are in my place? You are underground, you are beaten. And you know next day you will face 3 dogs who will tear you apart. What do you do if you are in my place? Start to pray. That's what you do. And this was my prayer. I told him, Lord, I want to thank you for your gift on the cross. I want to thank you that you died for our pain and our sin and our disease. And I want to thank you that you rose again to give us the way and the truth and the life. Even if you give me a second life, I will repeat what I did. I have no regret. You died for me, and I will live and I will die for you. I told him, but God, you know, and you created me out of flesh. You are aware how weak I am. And I don't know if I can handle this pain or not. For that, I will ask from you to kill me before tomorrow morning. So my prayer simply is, God, to kill me before the next day. From ashes to ashes, from dust to dust. I prayed in Jesus' name. Day number 3, I woke up. Did you ever wake up from your sleep? You didn't know if that's good news or bad news. I woke up. My cell is very dark cell. It's dark. It's not very dark. It's dark. There is no light. The corridor outside your room, there is a red light on the corridor, so when you open the door, the red light shines within inside your room. They open the door, and I can see a shadow of the 3 dogs getting closer and closer and closer to my room. And I can hear their voice. You know when you have 3 big dogs, the way they breathe, the way the chain around their neck, I can hear them, and I can see their shadow getting closer and closer and closer to my room. So I go and I sit down in the corner. So there's 2 walls. I sit down in the corner. I put my back on the corner. So I'm protecting my back. And I sit down in a position that my 2 knees is covering my chest. And I covered my face with my own hand. Why I was doing this? I was trying to protect my lung, my heart, my neck, my face. You try to protect as much as possible the sensitive areas in your body, so when the dogs attack you, you can survive longer. You allow the hand, like my hand, or the skin outside, or the legs. But you have to survive somehow. They don't teach you this in university. This is something that you are born with. This is your surviving skills. So I went and I sit down in this position. And I covered my face with my own hand, and I can hear the dogs getting closer and closer, and I can smell them. I know that they are in my room, and I know that they are in front of me. And I prepared myself for pain. I prepared myself for agony. And there was silence. And I didn't know why there is silence, even though I can feel the breath of the dog beside me. And this when I start to move my hand away from my face just a little bit to see what's going on. And that's what I saw. The 3 dogs sitting around me, none of them moved 1 single step. The officers and the soldiers took their belt and started to beat the dogs very hard to attack. The dogs didn't move. I saw a paw of a dog from the strength of the hit of the officer. The paw will try to hold on his body, to hold him. And the dogs wouldn't attack. This means the officer was really beating him hard. And the question here is, what will hold these dogs from attacking? The officers and the soldiers said maybe there is something wrong with the three dogs. So they took the three dogs, they brought another set of three dogs. The another set of three dogs sit in the same position was one little different. The middle one took a step forward and he licked my face. One day I was in the Congress, in the American Congress, and there was one congressman, he's a Democrat, and he doesn't like me for a reason or another. I don't know why. I don't care, quite honestly, but he can kiss my neck. I said neck. If you throw something else, you have a dirty mind, not me. And this congressman came, and his background is scientist. And I truly love scientists, and I love science, truly. I don't think that God and science is in a conflict, even though your media trying to show that. This is not true. I really believe that the amazing science proven to me that God exists. Whoever built all of this universe, whoever made you just use 5 to 10% of your brain, and yes, you're still functioning, whoever can heal immediately, all of this scientific evidence, it show me more that their God exists. They're not in a conflict with each other, and don't believe the people who tells you that. We have a Governor General, the President of the Queen, just a few days ago, she was in a science conference. She make fun of people of faith. All people of faith. She said, I can't believe these people still believe in this nonsense. And she's the representative of the Queen, the head of the Church of England. It's funny, isn't it? This congressman came and he said, I need to understand what you call it miracle, because he doesn't believe in miracles. So he's looking for a scientific explanation or logic behind it. So he was like, I just need to understand this, what you call miracle. These three dogs, like, why they didn't attack you? I told him, Congressman, I really appreciate your question and I would like to answer you. I told you, see, you are looking for logic, and that's not wrong. So you're looking for logic, I will give you logic. I told him, you see, these three dogs been trained to listen to their master, but there is no higher master than Jesus Christ, and that's your logic. The officers and the soldiers, they get the same message that I got, that maybe I'm alone, but I'm not lonely. They close the door. I didn't hear from them the rest of the day. Day number 4, officer number 27, very strong man, all muscle, and he just got like, you know, he remind me a lot with your, the guy that in your movies, become the governor of California or whatever it is. Yes. Like big, huge guy. I didn't watch any of his nonsense movies until I came here to North America. And in the end of every movie, he would say, he had very well known statement, "I will be back," or something like that. I don't think his wife that just divorced him will be back anytime soon, but anyway, that's not the point. But he was big, huge man like that, and officer number 27 came, and he opened the door very angry, very upset. And he said, "Listen, I'm not scared of you." I thought, "Of course you're not scared of me. You're the one who's torturing me. I'm the one supposed to be scared of you." He said, I'm here to make with you a deal. I told him, "I'm listening. I like deals, man. I'm listening. I like deals." He said, "You give me the name of your friends, who's the rest of your group, who's the rest of your team. I will release you. No more torture. I will make you witness in the case, and you're released. No more prison, no more torture. You want money, I give you money. You want a brand new car, I will give you a brand new car. You want bigger house, I will give you a bigger house. You want beautiful girls, I will give you beautiful girls. Whatever you want, I will give you." It's like, wow, man, that's an offer. That's an offer. This is everything that you want. Literally. I told him, "I will take the deal. I like the deal, I will take it." I told him, "But first, you've been torturing me for the last 3 days. Even if I want to give you the name of my friends, I don't have the strength to do that. Go get me dinner, and after that we'll talk." He said, "Whatever you like to eat, I will bring it to you." I told him, "Shish kebab. Did you try the shish kebab? Do you know even what's the shish kebab, the Egyptian shish kebab? Do you know what is that? It's better than McDonald's." Well, everything is better than McDonald's, but that's not the point. He went, he bring me shish kebab. I sit down, I ate. He said, "Now you tell me the name of your friends." I told him, "Cup of tea first, man, and after that we'll talk. Come on now." He went, he bring cup of tea. I sit down, I drink it. He said, "Now you tell me the name of your friends." I told him, "Listen, I have a problem. My group is a very big group. I will not remember all their names, but I can give you the name of our leader." You can catch him, and he will give you all their names. He will remember them one by one. I said, "The name of the leader? I thought that you are the leader of this organization." I told him, "I'm a servant." "You have the wrong leader. I'm a servant." I said, "Tell me the name of your leader." "I like that. Tell me the name of your leader." I told him, "The name of our leader, Jesus Christ. If you can catch him, you can catch him." He wasn't really happy like you, I can tell you that much. Officer number 27, he punished me two punishments. The first punishment, that he slapped my face. And you have to understand that he was a big man. So when he slapped my face, I was standing in the middle of the interrogation room, and I hit the wall. That's how strong what the hit is, that I hit the wall. I always make joke about it. I always say it was my first time I fly without aeroplane. It's brand new, meaning for free air miles. Some of you will come to me later on and say, "How come you're laughing about something bad like that?" So allow me to explain to you. Once again, I'm ADDDD, so I will not be standing. I'm actually stood up there for too long. I usually would move faster than that. Allow me to explain to you something. I'm laughing about it and I'm joking about it because 15 years ago, officer number 27 thought by slapping my face, he will break my soul, he will break my spirit, that I will spend the rest of my life crying in tears, broken, shame. He didn't know that 15 years later I would be standing up here in Waterloo making fun about him. What officer number 27 or any of our enemy doesn't know or doesn't understand that they can always hurt our body, but no one can touch our souls. My second punishment, officer number 27, he took me to another dark room, and this dark room, there was a piece of wood in cross shape. They took off my clothes, they tied my hand, my neck, my wrist, my arm, my leg, and my feet to the cross. They didn't nail me to the cross, but they, and your feet is touching the floor. Especially the tie on the neck, because if you try to sleep, it will choke you, so you have always to keep it a straight line. And I was there for 3 days. You want to go to the washroom, you go to the washroom as you're standing. And you can't sleep. In the end of the 3 days, they brought a knife and they made a cut in the back of my left shoulder to the bones and they put salt and lemon in the open wound. It was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, I received a medal. Queen Diamond Jubilee. That's what they call it, Queen Diamond Jubilee medal. I don't know. And it was given to me from the defense minister at the time, Jason Kenney. And Jason looked at me, and I know Jason for 10 years. He's a very close friend, and he's a good man. And Jason looked at me, he said, Majid, this is your first medal. I told him, no, sir, it's my second. He said, what's your first medal? I told him, the scars on my back. It's my first medal of honor. So now I have a medal from the King of Kings, and I have a medal from the Queen. I tried to sell it on eBay. It was only $40. It didn't work. I'm joking. I wouldn't do that. I actually love the Queen. I think she's cute. I actually do really love her. I think she did a lot to her country. After they made a cut in the back of the shoulder to the bones and they put salt and lemon, it's mercy from God when you are under a lot of pain, your nerve system collapses, which means that you lose your consciousness. I woke up, I found myself in a hospital for 3 months. It's called a Laguza Hospital. It's a police hospital in Cairo. And for 3 months, I couldn't move. My body would refuse to move. After 3 months, I was placed. After 3 months, they wrote a certificate that I'm mentally ill. That I'm crazy, basically. And that's the system in the Middle East. Actually, some members of my team today will agree with this medical report, but anyway, that's a different story. But this is the system in the Middle East that if they disagree with you, they will call you mentally ill. And that's because they will, if they kill you immediately, they will make out of you a hero, a martyr. So they have to destroy your reputation first, and after that they kill you. So I was in house arrest for another 11 months or something. After that, they present me to court-martial or martial, like military court. And military court, you don't have a lawyer. It's just a judge that is a general, basically. And you don't have, like you go, they tell you, this is your charges, and that's it. It's a kangaroo court. So I went to the military court and the judge looked at me and he said, you are charged with 3 charges. Charge number 1, that you try to make revolution against the Egyptian government. 2nd charge, that you try to convert the public from Islam to Christianity. 3rd charge, listen to the 3rd charge quickly, carefully, that you love and you worship Christ. I will never forget this day. And I would tell you now what I told the judge then. I told him, Your Honor, if loving Christ is a crime, If loving Christ is wrong, I don't want to be right anymore. And if it's loving, if worshiping Him is a crime, I'm guilty as charged. I received the death penalty. They transferred me back again to the house arrest for 4 days. Few hours before they transferred me back again to the prison where the death penalty will take place by hanging, my team, my group that I built in Egypt, they came, they attacked the house with machine guns. The house where I am is protected by 5 soldiers, 2 inside, 2 outside, and 1 on the roof. So my team, I didn't even know that they was preparing something like that, but my team, they came, they attacked the house. They had a battle weapon with Egyptian soldiers. Nobody from the Egyptian soldiers was killed. 2 of them was hurt, but they were survived. Don't worry about them. And I was able to escape from my home to Alexandria. In Alexandria, I hide behind a police station. Why behind the police station? Because this is the last place that the police will try to find you. During this time, the Egyptian government put my pictures in every TV channel and every newspaper, and they made a reward, whatever they call it. I think my first prize, because every year, if they didn't catch you, you increase 10% or something, I can't remember. So my first price was £500,000 Egyptian with American dollar. This was years and years ago. With American dollar, this would be like around 100,000 American dollar. I don't know how much it is now. And I wouldn't tell you how much it is now because I don't trust you. I don't trust some of you, like just straightforward. We're in recession. I don't trust you. Some of you want new car. You're not getting it this way, just FYI. My friend, they told me you cannot stay in the country anymore. You have to escape. Well, how do you escape? You are on a blacklist. You cannot take your passport and tell them, you know, I'm leaving to Europe or leaving to Canada. You have to escape. But how do you escape? If you know the map of the Middle East very well, Egypt surrounded by Arab Muslim countries. So you have Sudan, you have Libya, Saudi Arabia, Jordan. The only one country not Arab and not Muslim country is Israel. Well, all of you don't know the map of the Middle East at all, isn't it? So Israel is the only non-Arab, non-Muslim country. What did I know about the Jewish people at this time? I know that the enemy of my enemy is my friends. Logic. So I escaped from Alexandria to Sinai, and in Sinai, I hide with Bedouin family. You know the people of the desert. And it's a good thing because when you live in the desert, you have to always cover your face because of the sand. So I hide 2 months with the Bedouin people, the people of the desert, within the depth of the desert. And I was able to monitor the border between the Egyptians and the Israelis. So there's 2 ways to escape, through the mountain, but the mountain is very hard and very high, and there's a lot of security points, or through the Red Sea. The only problem with the Red Sea, you're not Moses. Your stick doesn't work there. And trust me, I tried. The second problem is there is 2 military boats standing against each other. One is Egyptian military boat, one is Israeli military boat. You try to cross the border, and they're always facing each other, you know, because it's the border. You try to cross, they will shoot you in the water. You try to cross, even if you swim, they will shoot you. And the system in the Middle East, they will shoot first, they will ask questions later. How you escape? So I went and I stole jet ski. Are you familiar with jet ski? Sidu, whatever you want to call it, motorcycle and water. I went and I stole jet ski. Some of you would tell me about your reverend, you're a man of God. How could you steal a jet ski? I stole the jet ski and I enjoy it, and sue me. I don't care. There is a period in your life. I'm 40 years old now. I stopped caring when I was 30 or 29. I was like, I don't care what the people think. I will just do my thing. Like, seriously. There is an age when you grow up. So woman aged like wine. They become more refined, they become more beautiful, more everything, you know. Men aged like milk. Men age like milk. We become more sour. Do you understand what I'm saying? We don't care. We simply don't care. I just want you to know that. I went and I stole jet ski. And it's not hard to steal a jet ski because the only thing the wires under that, no, I'm not telling you. Anyway. I stole a jet ski. I waited until 5:30 p.m. Why 5:30 p.m.? The sun is behind you. Which is mean, whoever looking in your direction will be blinded for 20, 25 seconds, which is enough time to get the jet ski enough in depth in the water. Still, how you cross? You cross from here, they will shoot you. You cross from here, they will shoot you. The only way you can cross, and they cannot shoot you, is if you cross between the two boats. Because if they try to shoot you, it's called crossfire. They will shoot each other. And the last thing that the Egyptians or the Israelis won't start a new war in the Middle East because just a brown guy crossing on a jet ski. And by the way, I don't care about colors and race, just FYI, sorry. Maybe this year white guilt is not my problem. You know what I mean? Like, I speak about white people, brown people, black people. I make fun of everybody, just FYI, just sorry. Like, oh, we can't say brown people anymore. And I was like, no, they are brown people. The different, my friend, they will call me brown sugar, but that's a different story, ladies and gentlemen. How you cross? You cross between them. By the time they will turn their boat around, you already reach Eilat, which is so the destination from Taba to Eilat, if you went to the Middle East before. I surrendered to the Israeli police. According to the peace agreement between the Israelis and the Egyptians, it's called Camp David peace agreement. The Israelis cannot accept refugees coming out of Egypt, and the Egyptians cannot take refugees coming out of Israel. The Israelis put me in prison for 1 year, 3 months, 15 days, 12 hours, 24 minutes, until the Israeli Supreme Court and United Nations and Amnesty International take a decision about my case. After 1 year and 3 months, the United Nations, UNHCR, with the help of Amnesty International, recognized me as the first Egyptian was recognized as a refugee, came out of Egypt in the last 60 years of its history. During my time in the Israeli prison, I learned the Hebrew language. And before I leave, a criminal, one criminal, and two of the officers, the guards, came to the Lord before I leave this prison. After that, I lived for another year and a half in Jerusalem through United Nations again. They found me, three countries accepted me as a landed political refugee. Was Denmark, Australia, and Canada. I prayed to the Lord and I told him, Lord, which country? And the Lord said, Canada. The Lord forget to tell me it's 20 below zero in the winter. I was like, we're having a serious miscommunication, Lord. We have a serious miscommunication. I don't know what's going on, but I know you are brown too, so you can hate brown people. So anyway. We can make fun at our weather. Even we can make fun at how naive is Canadians. That's how they like to call us in the media. Canadians is not naive. They are kind. Canadians is not stupid. They welcome. They don't hate. They love. Canada is the ark of our world. And is the temple of human rights. Many of you born here. Many of you was born here. Maybe you didn't travel outside. Maybe you didn't see what's happening outside. But I hope to God that you know, like the rest of us who came as a newcomers and immigrants, how blessed we are to be called Canadians. How long ago? 12, 13 years ago. No, it can't be. 11 years ago, something like that. I stood in front of a Canadian judge. Now, when I became a refugee, the Egyptian government dropped my citizenship. So from the age of 20 until age 28 or 29, I used to travel with a UN passport and in front of my nationality, stateless, a man without nation. And the 12 years ago or 11 years ago, I was called to stand in front of an immigration Canadian judge and I swear the oath to become a very proud Canadian. And why did you laugh about that? What's funny in that? And the Canadian judge, now you can laugh after I finish this joke, but anyway. You laughed ahead of it. I don't know why. Oh, proud Canadian. Oh, proud Canadian. Oh, it's my accent. But that's why. But that makes sense. I was like, very proud Canadian. I was like, everybody laughing. I was like, what's wrong with you? I wish you see her face when she was saying brown Canadian. She was like, can I say that? I'm not sure. I'm white. I can't say that. Can I say that when I'm white? Like, that was her idea? Oh, she's laughing. She cannot stop laughing? Okay. So the Canadian judge looked at me and he said, son, what the first thing you want to do as a Canadian? I told him, Your Honor, I want to drink beer, watch hockey, and complain about the weather. He said, son, you're a true Canadian. I told him, thank you, Your Honor. I finished my testimony. Do you want to stay with me another 5 minutes? Or do you want to go? Do you want to go? Are you old? Do you want to go? You're good? I am old. I want to go. I came here to this great nation 15 years ago. When I came here, I refused to have a job from 9 to 5. It was never my life and it will never be. I started One Free World International for Human Rights. I used to eat a piece of bread and cheese and drink water for a whole year just to save money to start this organization. And the time that all my friends was telling me to stop doing this is too ambitious dream, I was determined to do it. Today, One Free World International, the lead human rights organization which comes to freedom of religion in Canada, and now we have branches in 28 different countries. And we understand it's not by our power or might, but by the Spirit of the living God. I take no glory in any of this, because sometimes when I look at papers, when I look at what we accomplish, I know it's not only us. And in some cases, not us at all. As you saw in this tape, from Afghanistan to Pakistan to Iraq to Syria, the front line is our mission. I was with the Canadian troops in Afghanistan. I was with the Canadian troops in Iraq. I get shot at 7 times in the last 5 years. And that's why I'm not a married man. And that's why I don't have children. And that's why I will never get married. And that's why I will never have children. Because if I died alone, it's fine. But if you have a wife and children, it's a different story. I get shot as 7 times in the last 5 years. And not even a scratch. My desire from the Lord, if I will ever die, if I will ever get killed in one of my missions, they will kill me before I pay my American Express, quite honestly. I'm taking them with me, that's all that I was saying. Doesn't scare me. It really doesn't. And I know some people, they say that, but it does for them. It doesn't scare me. I'm going home. I'm going home. And I know this will happen in one of my missions, but I don't know which mission. When ISIS attacked the Yazidis and the Christians, we had to do something. Did you know that ISIS took more than 7,000 girls, used them as a sex slaves? I saw as 9 years old, they used to rape her 20 times a day. They killed their men, Christians and Yazidis. Yazidis is another minority group in Iraq, you don't know them. They raped the women. They used them as a sex slaves. They would sell them $2,000 to $4,000 American dollars. Depending on your age, your beauty, depending if you are a virgin or not. Do you know that I can't sleep in the night? And I really try. I sleep 2 hours a day. 1 hour, 2 hours a day, 3 hours maximum. When you're looking at 9 years old that they used to rape her 20 times a day, how do you want to sleep in the night after that? So we said we have to do something. Our organization was able to get in ISIS territory. Well, I'm a brown Canadian, so this means that I can grow my beard, I speak their language, I know Islam very well. We was able to have an agreement with some of the Kurdish groups. We interfere in ISIS territory. And we succeed to free more than 600 girls. And some of them is here in Canada. Next time when I come, I will bring some with me. With the church family to meet them. Do not fear your enemy. ISIS or not ISIS, forget about this nonsense. Your God is more powerful. I can stand up here in front of you in the Persecute Christian Day and I can tell you how much damage ISIS is making. But instead I will tell you how great is our God. Amen. I will not give this platform to my enemy, but I will give the glory to God. I can tell you how many people died. But I can tell you more how many people prevailed. What you will give today in your love offer will come with me all the way to Syria sometime in the near future. I cannot give you the date for security purposes. But I will be on my way to Syria soon to rescue more of our girls. And I will not rest until I free every and each one of them to the best of my ability. Here is what you need to know. First of all, before I close, David, did you take some of the pictures? Okay, thank you. Outside, you found some of our DVDs and some of our books. If you want some of the DVDs and some of the books. Now, one thing very important, please, and I hope that you will understand me. So we sell the books and the DVD with $20 because that's what we're supposed to do as an organization. It bugs me when people treat the ministries like Walmart. We're not Walmart. You have the money, great. You don't have the money, but you still want the book and the DVD. Nobody's standing on this table. Take it and go. Are you listening or do you understand what I'm saying? You have the money, put it. Thank you. I will not be standing beside the table. There's no bodyguards around the table to protect the $20. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, are you nuts? You know what I mean? Like, you go outside, you like the DVD, you like the book, but you don't have the money, just take it and be blessed. We're not Christian Walmart and we don't sell the word of God. Okay? Now the 3 points that I need, and after that you have a signing sheets. So there is signing sheets, you put your name and your email. If you did this, you become part of One Free Word International. You receive our action alerts, and we will get to know the news, what's happening, you get to pray, you get to take an action. So also you can sign. There are 3 points I would like to discuss with you. Stop looking at people that they are going to the washroom. They are going to the washroom. Stop. I don't know why people, when they go to the washroom, everybody look at them. They are going to the washroom. And after they come back, we look at them. Like they just peed and they came back. We all pee. And if you didn't pee, you have serious medical situation. Like, here's the 3 points that I need you to know and I need you to remember. I will need your full attention. Number one, I'm not here because I hate my country, my original country, Egypt. It's the opposite. I love Egypt. When you love, you discipline, you correct, you fix. Remember always that they can kick you out of your land, but nobody can kick your land out of you. Number one. Number two, I'm not here because I hate Muslims. And if any of you left this church right now with any sense of hatred in your heart toward the Muslim people, we lost. I did not succeed in my mission. The Lord said, love your enemy, bless who will curse you. And he proved it on the cross when he said, forgive them, Father, for they don't know what they are doing. Love and forgiveness is the key to unlock the gates of persecution. We don't fight hate by hate, revenge by revenge, or evil by evil. We fight hate by love, revenge by forgiveness, and evil by the power of the living God. Don't you ever forget that. Even in the middle of the battle. One time when I was in Iraq, the Kurdish troops was able to arrest 2 or 3 of ISIS soldiers alive. And I looked at my security, and the head of my security is the Kurdish intelligent. And I told him, I would like to go see the ISIS fighters. I want to make sure that they have clean water and they are fed. And he looked at me and told me, do you know this guy's been killing our people, they've been killing our men, raping our women, and you want to go make sure that they have water and food? I told him, my brother, remember this. The difference between us and our enemy is grace. Never forget that, or you will become exactly like your enemy. The last and the final point that I need you to remember as long as you live. And thank you for your time. Today in the Persecuted Christian Day, here is what you really need to remember. The Christians is dying, but they're still smiling. They are in very deep, dark night, but they still have the candle of the living God. Our enemy have very strong army, it's true. Have very strong weapon, it's true. But we have the Lord Almighty. Remember, after every night there is new morning and a new day. After every storm there is sunshine. And after every persecution there is victory in Jesus' name. Remember this as long as you live. They can kill the believers, but they cannot kill the belief of our hearts. They can kill the dreamer, but no one can kill the dream. Thank you for having me, and God bless you.